It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
Welcome back on a Friday. Glad to have you with us. And Brian will be back on Monday morning. In case you're starred for the regular host, he'll be back after his vacation. But I've got you here till 11 o'clock and really do appreciate your company. You can weigh in with us as we shift gears towards the tech side of the world with our very own manager of IT. It's Darren Holt.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Now, you brought your... that way of talking again.
I do. I'm sorry.
You should be proud of it. If you don't know, Darren, you originally hail from...
the United Kingdom.
Yes.
Also known as Great Britain, or the full name of the country is the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. But that's a reason we call it the UK, because it's a lot easier to say.
And you're also a US citizen down there.
That is true. As of November 2016, I became a US citizen.
So did you keep your UK citizenship too?
Yes. The way that the British government works is unless I actually go to them to a consul and say, I renounce my British citizenship, you keep it. I mean, British, you know, they're very much like, we help, you know, at one point ran 2/3 of the planet, so a lot of people could claim British citizenship. can't really throw everyone off the books. And my children through birthright are also British citizens, so they get dual citizenship as well.
Well, we appreciate your citizen, and I appreciate you as a colleague, and I dragged you in here to talk about some tech stuff. Last time, we were talking about some. We were kind of talking about making life easier for us in the tech side of things.
Yes. And as we're both parents, I thought I would follow up on what we talked about last time, which was ways of legally capturing shows from Netflix and other streaming sources, and then keeping them on devices. So I know that the following things work pretty well because we just got back from a Florida vacation ourselves, and that meant 16 hours in the car both ways with two children who don't necessarily always share a tablet very well. So this time I managed to get them each a refurbished Amazon Fire tablet, and I managed to get a pretty good deal on that, which were $20 each. Normally you can find a refurb for about 40, but if you don't buy refurbished, then they can cost $100 or more. So the $20 tablet was an incredible deal. It was a very small internal memory, but that was fine because the nice thing about Amazon Fire tablets, as opposed to an Apple iPad, for example, is they have what's called an SD slot, which is a little tiny memory card, micro SD. And these things come in massive sizes these days. So you can pick up a 64 gigabyte card for about $20 and a 128 gigabyte card for about $40. So what I did is I had each of the kids had their own little tablet, and I put these massive cards in my computer, loaded them up with content already recorded in the past, you know, based on lists they each made me, and then they could watch hours of stuff in the car to keep my wife and I a little saner than we otherwise would be on a long drive.
And even if you found a refurbished one for $40, you said you found it for $20, but you couldn't find it for $40. I mean,
I just looked it up right beforehand, and I've found them online. It's an older version; it's been refurbished, and you know, for something I'm handing to a small child, I don't want to spend too much money on it just in case. I mean, it's kind of amusing to me that if I'd gone an even bigger card, perhaps the card might have cost more than the tablet.
Yeah. So my limit has been, I have a streaming service, and you can download select shows, mm-hmm. and it'll store on your device even if you're offline, and you can watch those. But there's not too much, you can't hold very much space on that, especially if you have an older generation tablet.
Exactly. And especially the older iPads, they don't come with SD slots at all, so there's no way to expand the storage, whereas an Amazon Fire or any other cheap Android tablet, I went with Amazon Fire just because of the deal I found. The operating system takes a little bit of getting used to, but I like the way they have this free time way of locking down. That's what they call it, Amazon free time. They have a way of locking down the kid accounts, so the kids only have access to exactly the things that you give them access to. So in this case, I gave them access to a free video player called MX Player, And that then was able to read off the memory card. And the only thing I put on the memory card was their videos. And it'll even respect folders. So I had a folder called Movies. And then if they had TV shows, I would call it, you know, Lab Rat Season 1 or Fuller House Season 1 or whatever it was they were looking at. So they could find their show easily. And I also put a couple of free games on there, like Subway Surfer and Colorfy. And there was a piano tiles game. And that kept them amused. And a couple of long extension cords for charging from the car. And they were all very happy. Occasionally, but when it was my turn to drive, my wife would get in the back, and we have a little holder for holding a tablet in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And the iPad we have is slightly larger, so she would get in the back with the kids, move my son to the middle, and they would all watch a movie in the back together while I drove for a couple hours or so.
And enjoyed peace and quiet.
Yes, I would have an audiobook in my earbud, so I'd be fine too, and it was all very enjoyable. As far as 16-hour trips can go, I think that was the best one yet.
Darren Holt is with us. He runs IT here for us at News Gazette Media. I had a question for you. I mean, I know you are not a network cybersecurity expert, but certainly something you have to deal with. But something that has always caught my curiosity is when I go to a coffee shop and sign on to the local Wi-Fi, often we'll say this is an unsecured network. And by and large, I just go, I'm going to roll the dice here because I want to be online, and I don't know that I'm doing anything that I really don't want people to see at the moment, at least anyway. So what are you exposing yourself from your understanding if you join onto a public Wi-Fi with a computer or a phone or a tablet?
Sure. Well, the key word here is unsecured, and your phone is warning you of that. So anything that you're doing at that time could potentially be seen by others, particularly if you're using unencrypted sites that don't have the HTTPS at the beginning of the website. And there's also a way, if it's unsecured, anyone can see all the information that's going back and forward, meaning that there's certain ways that someone could piggyback on your connection to, say, Facebook or Twitter or Yahoo or whatever, and then spoof your connection, fake your connection, so they're actually now connected side by side with your session, and that way they could get in and change passwords and what have you, and potentially, you know,
that,
you know,
sound...
and also, I think the most important thing I would just want to say real quick is if you're on an unsecured network or even one that is secured, but you're not 100% sure if the people running it are really, you know their stuff, don't access anything sensitive, and never, ever access your bank account or anything like that when you're out on a public Wi-Fi, whether it's secure or not, because it's just not worth the risk.
But, I mean, I don't know how to go access somebody else's information on secured. You kind of have to know what you're doing.
It would have to be someone who's sitting there and intent on doing it, or is close enough to get it, and it would be someone who's, you know, who's up to no good, basically, and within range.
Yeah.
Now, even with secured, you have to then, if you want to completely lock this down, you've got what's called network separation, so no device on the Wi-Fi can see any other device on the Wi-Fi, but most places don't turn it on. We have a public Wi-Fi in the News Gazette building, and we have network separation enabled so that my phone can't see what your phone's doing. They're treated as completely individual devices.
I appreciate that.
That's right. What you do on your phone is not up to what you do on your work computer. That I might have an opinion.
356-9397. If you've got any tech questions, and Darren, we do have one here from Eric. Good morning, Eric. You're on with Darren Holt.
Good morning, Eric.
Oh, how about I turn? You have to press the right button here, Darren. That's important tech. Okay, Eric, you're on now. My bad. Go ahead.
Good morning. Seems like you're a nice enough guy. However, I was mortified to hear this road trip with your family. Now, do you ever think about getting some comic books and get, you know, you got you wired up to earbuds, you got these kids on iPads or whatever it is. No one's looking out the window. No one's pointing out points of interest. You know.
Well, you sure.
I'm in the middle of a talk. No one's looking out. Dad's not saying here's $1 for every. When you find a Texas license plate, I mean, you miss the whole thing, man, over electronics.
Okay, well, Eric, that's enough. We're not here to judge how Darren takes a road trip with his family.
I will just respond real quick, though, is that it was a 16-hour trip, and they probably spent about maybe 4 hours in total on their devices. I was more focused on the ability to do it rather than the, you know, whether it's the right thing to do. They had to earn that screen time with reading books, reading to each other, doing homework. And we played, you know, license plate bingo, and when we were driving through the mountains and putting stuff out. But I figured since I was here to talk about tech, I would talk about rat rather than raising families. But your point is well taken.
Yeah, and nevertheless, I think it's your prerogative to do on your road trip as you would see fit, don't you think?
I tend to think so. My car, my castle.
We were talking about security in the Wi-Fi world. When you go to a public place like a restaurant or a coffee shop, how about, I assume, is it worse in a place like an airport? Well, first of all, getting on a Wi-Fi in an airport, it seems to be a huge obstacle sometimes, some of the airports around here, but is it worse out there, those extremely public Wi-Fis?
Generally speaking, the more people that are connecting, the more you're putting yourself at risk. Even if you have a computer, you know, like Windows PCs, when you connect to a Wi-Fi, will say, you know, is this a public connection? Is this a home connection, a work connection? And if you say that it's public, it'll lock down the firewall a bit more so that you don't have as many things exposed to other people, but still every connection, especially unsecured connections you're making, are visible to other people. My feeling is that you're going to be doing anything even slightly sensitive on your device, then you may as well stick with your paid-for data, which is a one-to-one connection to your cell phone provider rather than Wi-Fi. If you're doing something that's, you know, I just want to stream Netflix and I'm not using for my data for that, then, you know, go ahead. Just be aware of what exactly you're doing, how sensitive it is, and, you know, is it something that you wouldn't mind other people seeing what you're doing?
Darren Holt with us. He handles our IT here at News Gazette Media. I wanted to shift gears for a moment to programs we use, particularly Microsoft Office. That is almost ubiquitous as the word processing and spreadsheets and PowerPoints and all that. But they've actually seen some of their users go away because people can use Google now. You can use Google mm-hmm. Docs. There's some free versions of Office-like products out there. Is Microsoft Office, they're trying to do kind of a retooling and a rebooting. Have you heard anything about this?
We tend, just because of the nature of our business, we tend not to be right on the cutting edge. I call it the bleeding edge because you're going to get hurt out there. I tend to, you know, prefer to use the tried and true standards. So there's Office 365, which is, you know, Microsoft's subscription method for Office, and that's the constantly updated version, is similar to Adobe Creative Cloud, where you're paying a monthly or annual fee for access rather than buying the software and owning it in perpetuity. We tend to be a little bit behind the curve on that. So, you know, for instance, we use Office 2013 on the Windows sides, and that, you know, we choose when updates get pushed out, and we choose who gets access to what.
But it sounds like it goes to the point, like, the newest thing in technology always maybe cool and shiny and flashy, but there's a lot of questions that haven't been resolved with it.
Exactly. You're exactly correct. The closer you are to the cutting edge, the more likely there is going to be problems, and the more likely that you're going to encounter things that no one else has seen. The nice thing about being a little bit behind the curve is if there's a problem and I need to find a fix, chances are somebody's already encountered it and somebody else has already figured out a solution for it. So, for instance, we had an issue a few weeks ago where Microsoft pushed out an update, and the people who get updates first, which is myself and a few others, suddenly couldn't access some remote desktop resources because there was a mismatch in version. So we had to either patch the servers with the updated version or roll back the test PC. So you always have to be aware of what versions you're running and what impact you're having. But the nice thing about, as I say, being a little bit behind the curve is somebody else has already encountered the problem and already figured out a fix.
All right, back to the phones. Question here for Darren Holt with Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I've got two real quick questions. What's odd is I've been getting these phone calls from different area codes, and nobody's on the other line. So I hang up, and then I put a block on the number, and then I get calls from the local area code 217. And it seems like it has my prefix that I use, but then again, there's nobody that's just air. And it sounds like somebody's just wanting to get my number. The other thing I'm getting now is text messages from people I know, and it has their name on it, and it asks me to open up their attachment via text. And I go to the person, and they didn't send it, but I wonder if they're getting their name from Facebook or something that I communicate with my friends with, that they're picking up their name and sending me these fake text messages. And I don't understand where that comes from and what they're trying to do. Are they trying to put a virus in my phone?
Yeah, I'll
good question, Joe.
There's a great question, and it's something that we've been seeing a lot more of, and I get asked about it at work too. It's two separate problems with the same underlying issue, which is called spoofing. This is a way that text messages and indeed phone calls can fake their caller ID information. So, for instance, one that I've been reading about a lot, and I've even gotten these calls myself, is it'll come up and say it's the Chinese consulate. And when I answer the call, just out of sheer curiosity more than anything else, it is indeed a you know, someone speaking Mandarin on the phone. And what they've done is they've made the call a robocall. It's, you know, it's not a real person on the other end, and they're trying to get hold of, you know, Chinese nationals or Chinese immigrants, and trying to tell them that hey, you're in trouble, you need to give us your personal information so that we can help you out in this particular case. But the problem with spoofing is there's no current way of stopping someone from using somebody else's caller ID. So, for instance, we had a call from a customer that claimed someone was calling from the News Gazette asking them for money, but it wasn't us. I mean, we do call people and ask them to subscribe, but this was a different thing entirely. And the problem with the text messages is similar, in that your friend's number has been spoofed and a fake person is sending you the text message with their number as the from, and then your phone, because it recognizes the number, says, hey, this is from Dave. So the number is right, but your phone is adding the contact information because it recognizes it in your contacts. But the link will be either a way of trying to, yes, could be trying to infect your phone, could be trying to get personal information from you for steal identity, could just be saying like, hey, do this, and then you've got to enter your credit card to get it, and they just want to be able to charge you directly. So always use good browsing. Stay secure, and if something seems suspicious, it probably is.
Yeah, it seems like you're right there, Joe, to ask your friend ahead of time, did you send this to me?
And absolutely.
I have found, usually if it's asking you to click on a link,
it's probably fake.
Yeah.
I get emails sometimes that look like they're from my wife, but they've gone to half a dozen different people, and all it says is, hey, click here, and it's addressed in Russian. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way in heck my wife sent me an email asking me to click a Russian link. This is just not going to happen.
But, bottom line is, you really can't stop it. It's just something you have to deal with.
The current level of technology, the way that caller ID and the related system on the SMS side works, there is no way to lock it down. One would hope that technology will advance to the point it is, but the problem with SMS and phone calls is you have to be backward compatible to the dumbest phone out there, and by that I mean landlines and other things. So you can't make it so secure that those phones then don't work anymore. So it's a real balancing act. So it's a lot more prevalent at the moment. We're seeing a lot more spoofed caller IDs. I guess the way to do this is becoming more and more easy for people who are up to no good. But just be aware that if someone it isn't someone you recognize or is doing something that you don't think your friend would be doing, check with them first.
Darren, really great of you to come by and share some of
Happy
your
to
insight.
Be here. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll do it again. That's Darren Holtz. He's manager of information technology here at News Gazette Media. Local news is in a moment on Penny.